Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Ben Carnes, host of Eagle Man's Choctaw Nation, Blog Talk Radio. Well, we have a different topic for today. Even though the election won't be starting until next year, I thought it would be a good idea to begin discussions, and we'll have several more discussions about the Choctaw Nation election between now and the time all the votes are cast and put in. And I believe we'll still keep talking about it afterwards. You know, the reason why I wanted to begin this discussion earlier is, you know, I moved to Oklahoma, back to the Choctaw Nation, 2010. And 2011, they had the council elections and elections for the chief, and the chief had ran unopposed. So during the course of the election, you know, I listened to a lot of people talk about a lot of the issues that were going on, and I could really see how alienated so many people were from the tribal government. You know, they feel that they're not any accountability. There's no transparency. They feel they see a lot of favoritism. And even though there's nothing in our Constitution that prohibits it, that I can tell, you know, a lot of nepotism, which means, you know, the hiring of families, so all certain families, you know, they have a lot of relatives on that are not going to lose that job. They're going to get promotions. They're all going to get paid really good. I mean, these are a lot of the complaints. You know, these are the allegations. You know, I posted something earlier on Greg Powell's fan page where they, or no, the Choctaw Nation page, not his page, you know, about the Promise Zone. And I restated my concerns. Why is it that the Choctaw Nation is getting a designation as a Promise Zone, which, you know, if it's all shared equally, that it comes to about over $17 million? How is it that Choctaw Nation becomes so impoverished when we are a billion-dollar-a-year industry? You know, that's been quoted in the tribal paper, and it's something that they're very proud of. Well, you know, as a nation, you know, we have that money. We also have 210,000 tribal members. So I thought, well, maybe we have counties that are, you know, some of the poorest in the country, even though I've always heard about South Dakota having more. So I did my Google, checked it out, and out of the 100 poorest counties in the United States, Oklahoma has only one county that comes at 64. And that is Ader County. That is not within the Choctaw Nation territory. That's within the territory of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. And so I looked up to the top, and there's about six counties out of South Dakota that are the poorest in the nation. And so I had a concern, why are we getting $17 billion as a Promise Zone from Obama? You know, the publicity, the media spin, everybody's making out what a great thing it is. But, you know, we've had issues going on here, like the KXL pipeline that's coming through the Choctaw Nation territory. You know, there is opposition to that, but we heard nothing from the tribal government. And then somebody else had mentioned that the Choctaw Nation had also raised like over $200,000 for Obama's reelection. You know, if you pay attention to politics and you see who contributes to these campaigns, and when these people are elected, you keep a close eye, keep track, and you'll find that some of the biggest campaign contributors gets rewarded in one way or the other through favorable legislation, political appointments. One case, for example, is the Cobell settlement. Keith Harper was one of the attorneys for Cobell. And when the Interior Department, their attorneys came and approached the Cobell attorneys with their settlement offer, the Cobell attorneys jumped on it. And they turned around and told the Indian country, this is a victory. We won. Here, take the settlement. Sign off on it. There are some people I talked to over the phone who called me after, you know, this became a bigger issue than they would have liked. You know, they told me about some of the problems they ran into is that, you know, their family has had lands that was being illegally mined by, I think it's Pegasus Corporation. and millions of dollars of gold has been extracted from a mine they created on their land. And they had told the Cobell attorneys that they didn't want to sell. They wanted, you know, to get this accounting done of how much was stolen. And the lead attorney, Gingrich, threatened his family. They threatened them because this was their chance for a payday to get out of this case while the getting was good. I mean, that is a fact. All you have to do is look at the cases. When a former Oklahoma judge was sitting on it, he had reissued a lot of rulings against the Department of Interior. You know, every ruling was in favor of the Native people, in favor of Cobell. And the government attorneys finally got an appeal to the Tenth Circuit and complained that the judge is biased. And the Tenth Circuit had this judge removed. Once that judge was removed, you know, all those decisions, all those court orders were reversed or dismissed. And the tides start turning against the Cobell attorneys. And now they're on a losing end. So, yes, you know, do I really blame them? Well, they're greedy. What can I say? You know, they wanted the money. They invested a whole lot. And they're going to salvage what they could. All they had to do is convince the plaintiffs, that was me and several hundred thousand other Native people, that this was a victory. And I wrote a blog on my blog spot about it. You know, the example that was used is if the government put 10 inches of a knife blade into our backs and only pull out a few inches, and now that's called victory. That is how they told it to us. And Keith Harper, who happened to be Cherokee, had raised quite a bit of money for Obama's campaign to be reelected. And last July, Keith Harper was nominated for a diplomatic position to the United Nations on human rights. Well, I think that is a farce, but, you know, hey, that's politics. People get rewarded for as much money they can raise. But the tragedy, the insult for the human rights issue is that this Cobell case was about getting an accounting of how much money was stolen from the accounts of Indian people. You know, when the Oliver North hearings were being held, I believe there was testimony that came out that they had used some of the monies from individual Indian money accounts held by the Department of Interior, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, to fund his smuggling of guns for drugs. He took guns down to Nicaragua and South America and brought back drugs. That's what he was tried for. After his conviction, he was immediately pardoned by the president. So he walked free, but no investigation. And that is the thing. If they were to investigate this fully, if the Department of Interior had not destroyed documents, did not shred them intentionally, deliberately, who knows who could have been found to have embezzled within those accounts. Could be existence politicians, you know, congressmen. It could have went all the way to the president's office, former presidents, but they had to cover it up. So that is what happens there. And that is the nature of politics and elections, and we have these elections coming up. And I'm encouraging our people to pay very close attention to how it's run and what is done. Because every 4 years, well, actually every 2 years, we have elections. For those who aren't familiar with the Choctaw Nation process, we have 12 tribal council members. And every 2 years, half of the tribal council has an election. So this year, next year, we'll have the 6 tribal council seats up for election and the chief's position. And then in 2 years from now, or 2017, there'll be an election for the other other 6 tribal council seats. So we're going to have to pay really close attention to how these things are conducted, because we feel that there's fraudulent things taking place. Then we need to find a way to address it and to rectify it. I know I talked with quite a few people since I moved here about these issues. And there are some people that says, we'll get the federal government involved. They'll take care of this. Well, let's think about that for a minute. When has the federal government ever had our best interests at hand? What they need is puppets in the tribal councils, They are the puppeteers. They are doing what they want done. While at the same time, they do allow them, you know, to give the show an image that they are representing us and fighting us for us against the federal government. I don't find that to be true. So those are going to be the ongoing discussions that we're going to have between now and until whenever we see a fair election. When's that going to be? I can't tell you. Because, you know, I am not the first to come up and start trying to raise people's attention to these things. You know, there's a group of people who tried several years ago. There's also the group of people who helped develop the Constitution in the 1970s, which was finally ratified, I believe, in 1983. This has been ongoing. You know, do I have all the answers? Do I have all the solutions? No. I wish I did. I'd run them all over and run them out of office and expose them for who know what they are. But, you know, I've had relatives who worked for the Choctaw Nation ever since the beginning. And I've heard so many things that has taken place that there seems to be that pattern of corruption that goes on. But they're so insulated. They have intimidated so many people within that staff that they just be quiet. They got a good job. And they go about their business. But it seems like every now and then when some of us begins to, you know, raise a ruckus and start trying to lift that veil open so people can see what takes place, they are told they better go talk to their cousins, their uncle, their nephews, their nieces. Tell them they need to be quiet and quit raising such a fuss. And then they feel those persons who are trying to do the right thing find that their relative is going to lose their job. Or, you know, I just don't like the way it goes. And what do I? Because I didn't say I didn't have all the answers. I don't. I got some thoughts, but I do have some ideas. And the only thing that I can present to those people is that sometimes we have to make sacrifices. You know, we can't have our cake and eat it too. In some cases, and if we want to see this change, then plan on things happening. Plan on making those sacrifices, because it's going to happen. If they can find a way to manipulate you, they will. If it's threatening your relatives, maybe even threatening you, or paying close attention to you, and every time you put an application in for educational support, repairs on your Indian home, you can probably get denied. You're going to be told, oh, well, there's not enough money in the account for this. We'll consider you next year. They're going to put you off, but you're going to look up and see people who are related to executive directors, people high up in administration who just put in an application after you did, and, well, they got some really nice stuff done to their homes. Oh, they got a lot more money for their educational things. But because we have no transparency, we can't watch and see how these things take place. You know, the tribal council, I went to their meeting over a week ago, and in a new business, they told us that they had already discussed a lot of these things earlier. And all they're going to do now is vote. They already knew how they were going to vote before they got there. There was no discussion. So we don't have any idea what, you know, some of these things were about. So we can try to push and see if we can get more of these things brought out into the so-called tribal paper. It's not a newspaper. Never mistake that for a newspaper. Because what newspaper do you read that sugarcoats everything? That makes everything look like we live in a state of utopia, that everything's perfect. You know, if you believe that, then you live in an illusionary world, because that is not what we have. And I even know that for a fact, because I had spoken with a lady named Mandy, and I believe I mentioned this last week, about putting people's comments who are critical about the administration have questions. And she sneered at me and says, why? I told her for accountability, for transparency. Because I said, there are rumors that floats around and people get it all turned around by a third, fourth person. And if you print these things that they publish, because everybody's heard them, and if you can address it and show where they had misunderstood something or how the policy actually read, you could clarify a lot of things and start gaining respect and support. But obviously, she doesn't care about none of that. And if she's an extension of Greg Powell as his executive assistant, then it goes even further. You know, I know people had told me, well, go see Greg Powell and talk to him. He's a good man. He'll listen to you. Well, I don't feel like I want to take a day off of work. I don't feel like I want to waste my time just so he and I can talk. He's going to tell me whatever he wants to hear. But you know what? He's got a Facebook page where everybody can see this. So I'm going to post my comments and my concerns right there and wait for an answer. Because then everybody can see my question as I wrote it, and they can see his response and his answer as he writes it. And so far it's not happening. I mean, if the man has nothing to be afraid of, I need some concerns about this promise, about this $17 million that we may be getting. But I don't believe I'm going to ever get an answer to that. But I'm going to put it out there anyway. And I'll remember that. And I know I posted just quite a few places about this show earlier. And one of my friends, Marion, says, why don't you run? Well, you know, it's really not been a secret that I've said I would run. Now, do I really want to run? Am I going to run? Well, that's going to be a big question later on. Because I really do have mixed feelings about actually doing that. I want to do it. I want to bring a lot of questions up. I want to try to force issues on a debate. I want to be able to try to counter everything. Just to do it. Just to show people that you got to stand up and say something. And I know a lot of people have tried different things before. And maybe they succeeded to an extent. In a lot of ways, they maybe lost a lot of ground. I don't know if I'm going to be any better, but I always feel like, you know, I have to try. But the other problem I have with this is by running and becoming part of a system that's created by the federal government, because remember, this is not a traditional government of the Choctaw Nation. This Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma has been permitted to exist by the federal government. No more than a JC organization inside of a prison. They have to petition, ask for permission from the warden to form such an organization, Toastmasters, JCs, hell, even 4-H, if they had the facilities, they'd have to ask permission. Even Native prisoners, form Native prisoner or culture organization, have to ask for permission. And it's not so easy for them to deny it, because that was actually a court order that the prison officials must allow that, pursuant to procedures approved by the warden. So that's basically what we have here. Let me take care of a little detail here real quick. And because I'm going to have somebody call in here in a minute who's going to carry some of this while I do a little bit of background research. So anyway, as I said, by participating in this election, and remember, just because if I even won, you know, the people I'm going to need may feel like they're going to make sure my administration sucks, because they liked it better under Greg Powell. They like it better under Gary Batten. Because one of the things I feel like is none of these executive directors, these tribal leaders, should be living better than the elders. You know, we don't know what the statistics are, but how many of our people are living below the poverty line? What have we done for them to help bring them out of there? To help them make their life better, to help make them more successful. Because, you know, I had talked to a lady years ago when I was in Europe. She ran a successful business, and her philosophy was to give a hand up and not a handout. You know, I don't want to do handouts for the Choctaw Nation. I want to do hand-ups. You know, somebody wants to start a business. Well, hey, what kind of business experience do you have? Do you know how to write a business plan? Let me see your business plan. If they don't know how, okay, well, let's see what we can do to get you trained. Because, you know, we have a lot of opportunities within our social service programs. And if you don't know they're there, then we're going to have somebody help you to find what you can qualify for, what you're going to need to get help. And once you're thoroughly trained, and we have the ability to provide startup funds, yeah, I want to help our people get a business started. But I'm not going to give you, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 just on your word that you can do a good business and nothing happens. Because if you start a business, then I won't expect you to hire other top people and show them how to conduct businesses. And we had a lot of people who have moved out from within the Choctaw Nation area because there's no jobs for them here, no chances to move up. And this is what we have to do for ourselves and self-determination. But if I were to start, you know, getting things passed where we're going to cut everybody's salaries back, because I feel like if people can work for the Choctaw Nation, they should do it for the love of the people, not for how much money they're going to get paid, you know, what they can get for themselves and their family. Okay, hang on, I was told. Okay, she'll change to ask something, so it'll be add another aspect to what I want to do. The basis of me running for chief is, okay, first, Greg Powell, Gary Batten. Oh, yeah, they're very successful businessmen. We wouldn't be where we are right now if it weren't for their, you know, business skills and experience. But it's not all them. It's their staff. It's the people that works for them. They're the ones who writes the grants. They're the ones who searches for it. It's the other people who takes these plans and implement them. But the thing that I want to do, the direction I feel that we need to take as a Choctaw Nation, is that our decisions should be based upon traditional philosophies. Let's use one for example. We don't take more than we need. So do our executive directors and chiefs need to be making over $100,000, $200,000? Do they need that? They need that more than our elders who are living below the poverty line? I think everybody knows the answer to that one there. And they're not going to like that. And so some of these people may decide, well, I'm going to go work for somebody else. Well, fine. But let's try to get people into the Choctaw Nation who cares about the people. You know, somebody asked before, how much would I want to pay the chief? What do I think is a fair salary? You know, I really can't tell you. I pulled a number out of the air, and that's what I've been basing it on. I would cap the biggest salary in Choctaw Nation at $60,000 or $65,000. I've never made that much before in my life. If I was chief and I was making $60,000, $65,000, I know right then and there that my family's going to have food to eat, my bills are going to be paid, that a lot of my concerns won't be taken away from working for the people. If I was getting paid $200,000, well, I wouldn't know what to do with all that money. What do I do, buy 4 or 5 SUVs? Do I need 4 or 5 SUVs? Again, we don't take more than we need. You know, we have a manufacturing business that makes manufactured homes. They're sub-quality. I don't care how pretty they look. They're sub-quality. If they're not made out of solid wood, built like a real home, then they're worthless. They're going to deteriorate 10, 15, 20 years, and all that money that's paid, you know, about $50,000, $60,000, it's gone. I have other ideas that, you know, we have some lands that are tribal lands that we can grow straw on. Then we can make straw bales. Then we can develop straw bale homes. We can build rammed earth homes. We can build alternative homes that are better insulated than anything that the federal government or Choctaw Nation has ever built. We can, you know, teach homeowners how to utilize solar and wind power and how to maintain their systems. You know, there's also our housing program. I talked to them before because I have 5 acres of Indian land. And I asked them, what could I do, you know, to get support to build a home? And they said, well, first of all, you got to get that Indian's restricted status off so we can get a loan from a bank, and then we can get a home built. And I said, okay. I said, once I pay off the loan and everything, do I get my restriction back? Oh, no, it's gone. Well, you know what? Screw that. Nobody should have to remove that restricted status. You know, why is that there in place? Because more of these Indian lands that has that status removed makes that land taxable by the state. Why isn't a chief? Why isn't the assistant chief raising hell to defend that? That we should, this is Indian land. If they're the restricted status, let's keep that restricted status. And let's bring back more of our land, get it in restricted status that's outside of taxation of the state. You know, that's one of my questions. That's one of the things I want to be able to address. The other thing we need to look at, we used to have our tribal law enforcement. You know, they were called law enforcement. And I watch now they're becoming the Department of Public Safety. Now they're SWAT trained, and as a couple of years ago, they were trying to get $500,000 armored personnel carrier that could stand rocket launchers and landmines. What do we need that for? Can anybody tell me that? Who can speculate every way from now to Sunday? But we don't have no need for that. Because I know the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, Powell and Batten, are not going to use armored personnel carrier to defend the Choctaw people from the United States. That isn't going to happen. That's not in their concept. That's not how they're wired together. Because I'm not saying anything bad about these men. Remember this, especially on this aspect. You know, yes, they have Choctaw blood. Maybe they grew up speaking a little bit of Choctaw. One of the guys came and said Halito properly. Instead, he pronounced it almost like you're saying burrito. He goes, Halito. That is not how you say hello in our language. Halito. And you say it like you mean it. You know, to make a big deal that you walk into any of our travel shops, any of our travel-around businesses, and you can be greeted in Choctaw language. And I'll walk into some places, and some go, Halito. You know, they're very uncomfortable in speaking their own language. You know, that's part of the assimilation process that we've been under. You know, our people need to feel proud about who they are. They should be able to speak this fluently. You know, speak it from the heart. You know, I lost my language because I spoke it until the time I was 12 years old, and I ended up in children's home reform schools and prisons and lost usage of it. Last night I was at a birthday party and I heard some people talking in Choctaw, and it was good to hear it. You know, I want to hear more of it. I want to be around it. If I can be around it, then my language will come back to me. I'll be able to speak it again. And if I can speak it again, if I were to run for chief and get elected, then I want to do the oath of office in Choctaw. I want to eventually have all of our application forms for support and services written in Choctaw. I want all of our people in the office to speak Choctaw and talk to Choctaw clients. You know, if the people can't speak Choctaw, then I think that should be a requirement for getting support or getting some help. Another thing I want to do is a lot of the people who are certified Choctaw language instructors, they're only given a stipend of $50 a month to do up to 4 classes a month. I think that's wrong. I think that it's a slap in the face. You know, these language courses should be ongoing. There should be a facility set aside for speaking a language. And if we have a facility for our language courses, then I feel that if we can take care of our elders who are still speaking a language, then we can bring them there every day, you know, take care of all their needs, feed them there. And our people can come and listen to them speak in their language, be a part of discussions, and it'll start coming back to some of them who maybe heard it when they were youth. To me, that's the direction we need to go as a Choctaw Nation. We don't need to put on the pilgrim dresses and the black hats and go pretend to be Indian. Now, if we're Choctaws, then that's our traditional dress, and wear them every day. Dress like that every day. But no, they only put them on when it's time for the tourists to show up. Because I know our stomp dance, the last time that we really ever held those waves was in the early 20s of the 1920s. And there an article reported that the stomp dance, they had joined together Cherokees and others in the Four Mothers Society. and that there were very private ceremonies. That if a non-native or non-Choctaw showed up, everything would stop. And they would meet with whoever showed up, and until they left, then the ceremony would begin. But I can remember in the 60s and 70s that all that was left of our stomp dance was that it was a performance. In the 1988, afterwards, after I was released from prison, I attended some of the stomp dance ceremonies with Cherokees, with the Seminoles, with the Muscogee people. And that was a ceremony. That was a prayer. And while I was attending the University of Oklahoma in 88 and 89, there in one of the power committees, they made a motion to hold a stomp dance contest. I just could not wrap my head around that, and then I decided, you know, I'm not going to participate in a power committee over something like that. So I withdrew, and did their stomp dance contest. I got a fake electric heater, electric fireplace, had little orange little ribbons and a fan and light that blew it up so it was simulated fire, and they had stomp dance contests. You know, is that what we've become now? So when a lot of people told me, once you quit Sundance and go back to your own ways, I don't know what's left. You know, there are people who are trying their best to bring it back. And there's a lot of criticism that from what they remember, what they've been told, that these weren't the right ways. So who's going to be the expert? Who's going to be the traditional leader who grew up doing these ceremonies? I know in the late 80s, early 90s, I went to go find a medicine person that my dad knew of in southeastern Oklahoma. And I barely remember. He told me where it was, and I remember when we used to go there when I was a kid. I went there and I talked to the people at that home, and they told me, "Oh, she's been gone several years now." They go, "Well, what did you need to speak to her about?" And I told them I was wanting to talk to her about some medicine and some ceremonies. They go, "Oh, we don't do those things anymore. We just go to church. If we need to get well, we just go see a doctor." You know, it's so sad, but that door is closed. All that knowledge, all those things that we could carry on is gone. What others do we have that practice and follow those ways? I'd be surprised if there's anybody left. You know, I know some people who claim they know all these things, but, you know, this is something they started maybe in the last 5-10 years. You know, we have Indian people all over the country all of a sudden become very hardcore traditional, and especially those from Oklahoma who go to other places. But we remembered some of those people when they were on Skid Row, walking down the street with an empty wine bottle or jewel hanging all the way to their knees. I mean, I am serious. But, you know, they found a break. They got away from the alcoholism. They made something with their lives. Yeah, I mean, I'm great. I'm happy for them. But I don't appreciate their arrogance when they think they're better than everybody else. They're just another disease, just as bad as alcoholism. So we're going to talk about traditions. Arrogance is not one of them. Pride's okay. We should be proud of who we are. Okay. Oh, good. Yeah, cat had posted if anybody can hear a dog snoring. And everybody says no. Well, I'm on the phone doing this show. When I first started the show, I was able to do it through the computer. And then I think one night I forgot and left my Bluetooth earpiece in, and it caused a lot of problems after that. I could never do the show through the computer again. So we'll eventually get these things worked out, and I'll become an old pro at it. So we've got a few people listening in the chat, and there's no telling how many people are listening through their phone. But does anybody want to call in and offer a few ideas, ask a few questions? Let me see if I can get on to some other points about the Choctaw Nation. I know that we have, 2 years ago it was reported that we have 5,000 employees, and just a few days ago I found that now we have up to 7,000 employees. And I don't know what the racial makeup is right now, but when we had 5,000, less than half were Choctaw people. The other half were non-native people. or natives from other nations. And I don't mind having other natives come in, because the whole idea about having native people is to have those who know traditions, who know traditional ceremonies, because that is the aspect that we need to build upon and to strengthen ourselves and strengthen our people. Because more of those people that we have working for our nation and in some of these, especially our youth programs, you know, I feel like we should be doing things in the summer for our youth, not just a 2 or 3 day thing and show them how to shoot a fake plastic bow and arrow and give them a tie-dye chicken feather for for their headband or something. I'm thinking that we should have some throughout the entire summer where they can be immersed around the language, that they can be shown and explain more about traditions. They could be showing how to, you know, survive in the woods, how to build a fire with nothing, you know. Go out there during a good night, because we don't want them to freeze or get injured, but go out and show us how they can survive, how to build a fire, how to create shelter, how to find food, how to find medicines. You know, have each one do it as an individual, then have them go out as a group and learn how to work together as a team, how to support one another. You know, there's so much that we can do. Oh, yeah, and go how to find wild onions. Because funny as it may seem, I used to go hunt wild onions with my parents, my relatives. I haven't done that in so long now, I'm not sure what I'm actually looking for. I've got an idea. But there's also some other plant that looks and smells like wild onions. So I need to learn again how to tell the difference. You know, all of us that are on Facebook, we see these posts all the time about Monsanto and GMOs. That is another way that we should be encouraging people to, you know, grow their own gardens. I mean, if they live in a city, there's a process called a square foot gardening that they can, you know, take maybe a 10 by 10 area and grow some good, healthy vegetables. And if you live in an apartment, well, you can make a small little garden in your window or in your balcony. Provide some of the things that you need. It's not provide everything, but yeah, the whole intent is to get you into the habit of gardening and learn, you know, how to, you know, create good soil, what amendments you may need for different soils, what the characteristics of growing certain vegetables are. So if you ever get a bigger place, then you're already ahead of the game. And this is what we can also teach our youth in doing summer camp. That by the time, you know, 2 or 3 months later when school's getting ready to start again, they'll have so much more confidence. They'll have so much more knowledge about history. They'll be so much more focused on the direction that they want to take their lives and what they could do for their people. That is how we should be doing things, not just doing a little 2 or 3 day event. You know, we have a lot of other people, you know, young people who are out of high school, haven't found what they want to do in their life yet. And I feel like that, you know, if we do this Trail of Tears walk in May, you know, do a few miles, so, okay, that's well and good. We need to do something to remember that. But I feel like, you know, we should find this route that our people have taken. And each year, a new group of people should retrace their routes and walk back to Mississippi. And in walking back to Mississippi, you know, they're going to learn more about this Trail of Tears and death. They're going to learn more about their history as Choctaw people. That in a way, this is like coming back home. It's almost like a pilgrimage. And if a lot of these guys, you know, had been in trouble and they got, you know, felony convictions, and they can take something like this, it gives a meaning to their existence. It could help them find a purpose for living and a purpose for being and a place to belong within the Choctaw people. That is how I feel that we can strengthen our nation. This is what we do not have. Our spirit is dead within the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, that entity created by the federal government. We need to bring that spirit back. And once that starts growing, then everything else we will be able to overcome. If we find that, say, for example, a tribal councilman who doesn't want to do what the people want, but thinks he can do better and make money for himself, well, you know what? Each of these districts, they should have their own war society to go in and take that person out of his office and block the doors, not allow him in, and call for an investigation. Our people should be able to do this investigation based upon facts, and they can find things that warrants it, justifies it. Then he's out. Right now, to impeach anyone, it goes back to the tribal council. It goes back to things called executive session, in which, you know, decision discussions are held behind closed doors. That is not transparency. That is not how we need to do things on that level. So there's a lot that we can do that we need to do. And whether it's ever going to happen or not, I can't tell you. But we got to try. To give up is to die. And I've never been known for giving up. Let me check in here, chat, and see what's going on. People talking about Monsanto and corn and 99-cent poison burgers. The sacred $5 carrot. Well, as I said earlier, if anybody wants to call in and bring up some issues or discuss some things, you know, you're welcome to it. You know, it's open discussion today. But I'm looking right now at the Chief and Tribal Council Election Ordinance. See if I can find anything of interest that might, you know, capture attention. I've looked at them from time to time. Well, maybe Ward, those of you who live within a Choctaw Nation, you know, talk to the friends that you know who are Choctaw and ask them, are they registered to vote? Have they recently updated their address with the Choctaw Nation? I mean, that's a good question. I need to see if I did or not. I mean, that's the one thing, whenever we move, we tend to forget about changing our address with so many other people. I mean, I think some of our people are just happy to move so they don't get any more bills. Bills collectors sent it to the wrong address after that. But I believe I corrected my address. I do get the travel paper here. Let's see. What else do we have that's interesting here? Okay. Section 7, this is Article 3, Section 7. Tribal membership voter registration applications may be processed any time registration is open. Voter registration for a person residing or wishing to affiliate with the district or an upcoming election closes at 4:30 p.m., 12 working days prior to the election. This will include all voter registration during the time of a chief's election. Any person turning 18 during this 12-day window will be eligible to vote as long as they have previously obtained tribal membership. Registration will resume at 8 a.m. on the first working day following the election. Okay, that's something that we all should be aware of. This is something that should always be discussed in the tribal paper, you know, at least good 2 months before the election as a reminder. You know, it's also a good reminder for everybody to update their addresses. Because I don't know what the percentage of voter turnout usually is in these tribal elections. That's something I want to know. That's something I should be able to go to the Choctaw Nation website and see whenever I want to. But it's not there. It's kind of like, you know, as long as it's out of sight, it's out of mind. Some things I've noticed, you know, from other Choctaws and posting on the different Choctaw groups and pages, you know, I bring up questions and automatically they're saying, well, Greg Powell's a good person. He wouldn't do anything wrong. And say, well, quit being a bunch of whiners. Quit complaining. I wasn't complaining. I was asking a question. And I have every right to ask a question if I have a concern. But these are people who want to leave things the way it is. They like it how it is. Probably because they're getting something out of it. You know, I even had people tell me I shouldn't speak bad about Chief because he is a chief. Nope, he's an elected politician, not a real chief. If he's a real chief, he would be doing the things that he has been doing. If he's a real chief, if he's a real leader, servant of the people, he would have slapped Hollis Roberts upside his head when he started molesting all those women that worked in the Choctaw Nation. But instead, the allegations that were made, and I did say allegations, was that he's present at the times that Hollis Roberts would grope some of these female employees of Choctaw Nation. And he would just turn his head and tell him, Hollis, you shouldn't be doing that. Or he would just turn his head and look the other way and not say anything. And as I said, those were the allegations during the trial for Hollis Roberts' misconduct, of which he was convicted and sentenced to a federal prison. And when the day that Hollis was convicted, sitting in the federal jail in Muskogee, Oklahoma, he began making phone calls to the Choctaw Nation. And Greg Powell told them to quit accepting his calls. See, he made a decision then, because at that point, Hollis was no longer eligible to be a chief. There was no impeachment, was not a non-issue. He was convicted of a federal felony charge. So he was out, and Greg took over. And geez, that was like, what, 14 years ago? Somebody have a date for me when that conviction took place? Oh, okay. Marion asked, how long can a person remain chief? Well, we have no term limits. He can be a dictator for life. And, yeah, as long as the power that be led him, that meaning the federal government, he has absolute power without any accountability. Which brings me up to, you know, Hollis Roberts again, because earlier on I had a relative who had documentation records that he's embezzling checks and monies. And she was going to meet with some people to prove all this. And on her way home, she just ran off the road. By the time she got pulled off out of the ditch, got home, somebody had broken into her house and all the documents were gone. So, yes, she had an attempt made on her life. She was intimidated. She was threatened. After that, she remained silent. Another person who saw Hollis taking money and checks, and she knew about it. And when that came out, Hollis Roberts threw her under the bus. She got sentenced for 3 years. And I know she is severely disillusioned, disappointed with Hollis Roberts after that, and so were the family. Then eventually Hollis Roberts was indicted for federal embezzlement, felony embezzlement. But through his attorney, they had those charges reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor, to which he pled guilty to. And then when there was a move to impeach him for those indictments, well, there's nothing that's within the Constitution that allows to impeach him for a misdemeanor. I think there is, actually, but he overcame that. He said the federal government was out to get him. That's why it was his vendetta, because he was a good chief. And you know what? People bought into that. So, you know, if I were to run, maybe we'll just get rid of that word chief, and we'll call it director and assistant directors. Because if we're going to have chief, then we should have a real chief. One that we don't have to put in place according to the BIA and have their permission. Well, yeah, somebody else pointed out, did people vote in the Choctaw tribal election? I've been hearing that for years, and I even heard it in the last election here in McCurtain County. Somebody said their dad voted 30 minutes earlier. And he said, I wish I could have been there because I haven't seen my dad since he passed away 5 years ago. So that was interesting. I had checked on what it takes to get a deceased person off the voter registration list. And it was explained to me that we would have to secure a death certificate and some other documentation. and submit them all to the election board. So right now there is no telling how many deceased people are on the voter registration list, and that these absentee ballots, if they're out of state, is sent to them at their last known address. And when it's declined because they don't live there, it's sent back to a Choctaw Nation. Nobody knows how many are actually recorded and destroyed as being unable to contact. For all people know is that somebody at the Choctaw Nation probably sits there, fills it out, signs that person's name, and submits it as an absentee ballot to help to vote, you know. Is that right or is that wrong? Okay, let me look at what else we got going here. Oh, yeah, somebody said, one woman I know during the last tribal councilman vote in her district got a letter thanking her parents for their vote. They have already passed on. This lady called and complained about it and hung up on her. So, you know, I feel like it's safe to say that there is no fair elections within the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And I said earlier, you know, what do we do about it? Because I am very reluctant, and I'm adamantly opposed to involving the federal government to watch over them. You know, if your dog is going into the hen house and killing chickens, who you going to call a fox on over to make sure the dog doesn't do it? Hey, that fox is going to help that dog get some. He's going to get some for himself. So who's going to watch over the chickens? Well, I think it needs to be us. It needs to be us maybe talking to other Native people. Tell me that we want to have observers. But of course, you know, this is something that Hollis, Greg Powell, this is something that they aren't going to agree to. So really, that leaves us without any recourse. So there's that question. How do we achieve fair elections? You know, the voter registration list, 210,000 people. You figure a price of stamp, and you can get 5 pages, 8.5 by 11, in the one envelope for one stamp. And if you even could get that address, you would have to mail that to over 210,000 people. Just imagine how much one mailing is going to cost. I mean, you can get a bulk rate. That'll bring the price down, but still, who has that kind of money to campaign on? I mean, there ain't none of us that's making over $100,000 a year or $200,000 a year. None of us can afford that. Well, actually, there is. I know some people can. It's probably Greg Powell, Gary Batten, even some of the executive directors. So, you know, we're going to keep looking at this election board thing. We're going to look at what we can do to make it happen. Okay. Section 8, Article 4. No, Article 3. A voter registration may be canceled for any of the following reasons. Subsection A. A member appears before a Choctaw Nation tribal membership voter registrar and executes a written notice stating that he or she no longer desires to be a registered voter of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma or sends in such request by U.S. Postal Services. No facsimiles will be accepted. Subsection B. The next of kin of a deceased member submits a death certificate or an obituary for that person to the tribal membership department. Subsection C. The tribal membership office is notified by another tribe that a member has registered with them. No enrolled member of another tribe or person who votes as a citizen or member of another tribe shall be eligible to vote in the elections of Choctaw Nation. Okay, so we have subsection B here. Most family members keeps a copy of the obituary. Maybe we have a death certificate, and it's got to be one of those certified ones that will let them boss that you can still see and feel. That's going to be something that we need to start putting the word out, that if we have family members who have passed on recently, last 10 years, let's make sure the tribal membership registrar knows that they have passed, that they are deceased. because if at some time in the future that they were able to get the election records more transparent, and we don't give them time to erase the documents, but we can see how many dead people have been voting. Because that's what turns the tide in these elections. I was told in Atoka County, all the local citizens, the people who resided there, voted for a new person to be tribal council. However, all the absentee ballots that came in from California, New York, Colorado, Egypt, Timbuktu, wherever, voted to keep the incumbent in office. Reason being is that the people who are voting absentee only know the councilman that the chief has tagged along with them to visit to California, to New York, to Colorado. They only know that council person because that's all they have seen reported on in the travel paper. As I said, the travel paper, you know, prints fairy tales. They show that we live in a utopia. There's nothing wrong here. Nobody complains. That's because that form of censorship keeps people from complaining, keeps people from having concerns noted. What kind of government does that? I think Saddam did that. Gaddafi did that. A lot of people did that. And the U.S. always called them dictators. So, think about it. I'm surprised we don't have a lot of people coming up telling me I didn't need to shut the hell up. Now, I don't know what I'm talking about. But, oh yeah, that's right, Bob. I'm not supposed to address them at the meeting, but we'll find out. We'll find out just how they want to deal with this. Because the one thing that I've been told is they are listening to us. They are reading what we write. And anything I've ever wrote and said, I haven't been afraid of them to hear or see. I didn't announce the show on the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma Facebook page, so they know that the show's on. They know that I'm talking about the tribal elections. They know that I'm talking about them using deceased people's votes to keep themselves and their friends in positions of power, as they see it. We know that they've been listening because we've been told that they talk about us after we post things, that some of us are topics of discussion. So, are we making a difference? I don't know. Because it's like a chess game. Anything that we see or do, they're going to find ways to counter our positions. You know, I start talking about how these people aren't leaders, that they're servants. Well, in one of the issues of the recent Bishnick paper, they talk about servant leadership. So, yeah, that tells me that they are listening. Because they don't talk that way. Oh, yeah, Greg Powell. Bob Burleson says to tell you hi. Yeah, I think he probably remembers Bob. And, you know, I've been thinking about something else. You know, Bob hasn't asked me to or brought it up. And I'm not doing it out of spite or anything, but I thought, you know, the more I deal with the tribal council, I'm going to ask the tribal council to give Bob Burleson pardon. And to recognize him for standing up and speaking up for the people. Do I really expect him to do that? No. But I want it said. I want it in a record. I want people to know about it. And you know what? This is like 30 years ago, I think, Bob. Well, 30 years ago, like this, well, what do you mean give Bob Burleson a pardon? What do you do? That's just it. I want people to talk about Bob. What did he do? Why was he convicted of treason by the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma? I bet people are listening now thinking, what, treason, what did he do? Yeah, well, I'd like to have Bob call in so he can tell us what he did. Well, it was so treasonous that they spent all this time and this money to convict him of it. And well, I think once you hear his story, you know exactly why I say the Choctaw elections are corrupt. why they want to keep themselves in positions of power. And I already gave you the key earlier. We are a $1 billion a year industry. Now, they didn't really get there because they're good, not in a good business way. They got there because deals were made, deals were cut, trade-offs were made that we'll never know about. And these trade-offs, these things, is what I believe compromises the integrity of our sovereignty. And we have the cross-deputization that is done with the state of Oklahoma. We have the Tobacco Compact, I believe it was in 1991, 1992, in which Choctaw Nation, Cherokee Nation, Seminoles, and Chickasaws signed a compact with Governor David Walters agreeing to pay them $21 million a year in lieu of taxes for sale of cigarettes to non-Indians on Indian land. And this was done about 3 or 4 months after the Supreme Court said that the states may not impose taxes on Indian tribes. However, they may enter into a compact. Okay, may is a discretionary word. It's not mandatory. They don't have to. But that's what these four tribes did. And Hollis Roberts being one of them, they signed a compact with the state. Again, it's compromising the integrity of our sovereignty. And we have Bob on the line for us. So, really, Bob, let's hear the whole story about how you and so many people come together and everything that led up to it. I like to be able to have this whole story recorded and have it here, because that has been 30 years ago. There's a lot of people who weren't even born then who are now voting age that they need to know this part of our history as the Choctaw people.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on again. I was on last week and chewed up quite a bit of minutes on the discussion. But, you know, I think the first thing I want to say is, you know, this isn't – Bob Burleson hasn't done anything. It's kind of like – I don't know, maybe you guys saw the movie Band of Brothers on HBO, and there at the end they're talking to the guy that eventually turned to colonel, and he said his grandson asked him, he said, "Papa, were you a hero in the war?" And he said, "No, but I served in a company of heroes." And I've been very fortunate over the past 30 years to get to meet and to know a lot of people who care deeply about the Choctaw Nation and its government and have actually done things that have tried to make things better for the Choctaw Nation, make our government an accountable and responsive and a government that we can all be proud of. And so I got to see all that, and I guess I was a kid at the time, and so I've outlived a bunch of them, and so I can still sit here and tell what people did. I remember the council from back in before 1981, when they used to meet over at Belvin Housing at Tallahena. They didn't have a council house at that time. And I remember there were, I think, 14 councilmen, because there were two that were absentee. And the absentee councilman, especially one of them that was Robert Anderson, really gave Hollis a hard time. And he worked hard to get rid of the absentee voters' representation and make it just 12 councilmen. And so absentees had to vote in you know, among someone's council, and that way they had a little control over them. They had to vote in the county. They had to register with the county to actually vote. They couldn't have their own representatives. And so I remember that. I remember what you talked about earlier, where Hollis was guilty of embezzling. He embezzled $15,000 from the tribe back in 1979 or 80, and when he was basically appointed chief and elected under a 1979 constitution, which eventually was thrown out. The tribal council at the time wanted to have a tribal court established that had civil, criminal, and probate jurisdiction. And Hollis didn't want that because the councilmen were going to then turn around and sue the guy in tribal court and convict him of a crime and send him to jail. So he didn't want that. And they asked us when we wrote the constitution in 1981, "Do you want this court?" And people voted no, because Hollis and one of the two groups that were instrumental in developing that constitution was actually controlled by Hollis. They told people, "No, we don't need it to be a big mess. You've got, you know, people all over the 10.5 counties, and it's just, you know, land here, land there. There'd be no way we can enforce it. We've got tribal, county courts and federal courts and city courts now. We don't need that. We don't want a constitution with that." And so So basically, when we did our Constitution, our understanding was that there was only one court, the Court of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, which had two functions, that it heard cases involving the impeachment, and they also to involve any acts of the tribal council, constitutional questions, tribal council acts, amendments, that kind of stuff. That was their bailiwick. The people took away civil and criminal and probate jurisdiction in that Constitution from their nation, which is important later because what we were convicted of back in this is the late 1990s, which is about 20 years ago, was that we challenged this in federal court. We said, no, wait a minute, we took this power away, and so the tribe doesn't have it, and yet they've contracted with the Bureau of Indian Affairs for a court system. And this court system was what they call the CFR court, the Court of Federal Regulation, which is basically a BIA court that's put in place on reservations where there is no court system. So the BIA can administer, laws, basically federal laws, over that county. Well, we had one in Ada, which is the main court for down in this area. The tribe contracted that, developed their own police force, and we said they don't have that power under the Constitution. We took that away from them. So this was heard on Dry versus the United States. And then we went all the way to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver, where basically the tribe got to that point and said, we've run out of money with this. We can't pursue it anymore. We're just going to drop all the charges against these people. And basically the point is moot. The unfortunate thing is that the federal government, the 10th Circuit, ruled that countries or governments have certain inherent powers. One is a power to pass laws over its people. And, argument was, well, that's fine, but that's only true if it's not a constitutional government. If it's a constitutional government, they're bound by their constitution, and the people took those powers away in the formation of that constitution, which we did, then the country does not have, the government does not have that power. We took it away. All power rises from the people, from the power of the people is the theory. And we took that power away in our Constitution. They basically said, well, you didn't expressly take it away. You didn't write down they no longer have civil, criminal, and private jurisdiction in your Constitution. We don't care what led to it. We don't care what you guys voted on and heard and all that stuff. We, go by this, and so they had that power. So we didn't really win anything. But as part of this whole election process, it wasn't just me that was actually convicted of acts tantamount to treason, and it was Rosie Carter and Doug Dry and Juanita McConnell. We were all taken to case in tribal court basically because I challenged this in state court. I said, well, wait a minute, they have these cross-deputization agreements and they don't have the power to do that. I mean, the Constitution doesn't give them the power to do that. It hasn't been decided yet in the federal court. In the meantime, they can come and swear out a warrant on me and drag me out of the emergency room where I'm seeing patients and put me in the Atoka County jail until they have a hearing, and then have a hearing, and then let me go. They could harass me that way. And since they don't have that power anyway, then the federal government, the state government, should not recognize those cross-deputization agreements. And so when I did that, the tribal government said, well, wait a minute. You're putting us under a state court. You're threatening our sovereignty. And so this is treason. And so they had a case in the tribal court, in the Court of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. The 11 of the 12 tribal councilmen signed a complaint accusing me of treason, or ex tantum of treason. That's the four of us. And they had their trial, and the tribal judges who were appointed by the chief at that time all found that we were guilty, and I don't know what the punishment was. I don't know if they actually had the power to have punishment. There's a lot of questions about, do they have the power to, subpoena witnesses? How do they set a jury and all these kind of things? They really didn't have all that worked out, but they basically convicted treason on that regard. And like I said, that I knew that the people who were doing it, that they were basically crooked and they were dishonest and they were doing this to protect their own power, and so it didn't bother me that much. But it still does bother you when your tribal government calls you a traitor. And so I've never sought to have it reversed just because I don't recognize, that as being a legitimate, finding. I know the tribal government does have that power to do it. The tribal court does have the power to do it. I don't challenge that. But the whole trial and the whole setup of the government, that kind of stuff, is not following the separation of powers in the Constitution. So I never saw it to be a legitimate act. And on that line, I want to mention one thing that we talk about that was brought up during these trials. There's a question of, well, should we even appear before some of these courts because we don't feel that they have any jurisdiction over us? And one of the lawyers told us, said, well, you know what, says if you appear, then you put yourself in their court. If you appear to say you don't have power over me, you've appeared in their court, you put yourself in their playing field, and you've got to obey by their rules. And so that's kind of what you look at when you go into tribal elections. If we're going to try to make changes by the tribal election, you know, by the election process, then we put ourselves in their court, and we have to obey by their rules. And Ben, their rules are crooked. You know, I think I mentioned on that you talked about dead people voting. The reason they can do that is because in the election system, we several years ago, we made complaints that, hey, tribal employees are the ones that collect the ballots. They're looking at them. You could hold them to a light, and you can see who was voted for. So, here's one that's voted for the chief. Yeah, that one gets put in the box. Here's one that's voted for the other guy. Oh, that one gets thrown in this box, you know, in the trash can. You can go through those and see them. So they hired a company, I don't remember the name, that is a legitimate company that does elections for other states and counties and that kind of stuff. They were going to be the ones that count the ballots for the election. They actually take them the names and, I guess, the labels for the ballots. They take them the ballots. They send them out to all the people that are on the tribal voter list, and then they come back to, you know, the tribal that company, the ones that aren't returned, that are actually signed and sent back in. They come back to the company. That company holds them, and then they count them. And they also count the ones that are done at the precincts, you know, through the little machines. They count all those. So that part is legitimate. The problem is, with, like you said earlier, people move and change their address. They don't notify the tribal government and that kind of stuff. People die and they don't notify the government, and, well, because they're dead. You know, their families don't notify them. And so those voters, those are called spoiled ballots. Those are ballots that are returned to the tribal council, the tribal capital, the Capitol building. And it's tribal employees who gather those spoiled ballots and hold them until the election day, and they turn them over to the company for counting. They also are the ones who guard the little locked box down there with the thing that they put the returned ballots in, that the company actually puts them in this big locked box, and they keep it locked until the day of the election. They open it up, and then the company counts the ballots and gives you the numbers. So you get tribal employees whose jobs depend on their loyalty to the current administration collecting those spoiled ballots. Well, somehow some of those get opened up and they get filled out. And, not, you know, 99% of the time, or actually say 100% of the time, they get filled out for the current councilman or the chief or what. And then they're put into that locked box, and then here comes that legitimate company, counts them, and that's how dead people voted, because someone filled those things out, put them in that box, and it's an illegitimate election. It's not a sincere election. Forget about the things you brought up earlier about, you know, you don't have access to the voters, and you know, they've had 30 years of the Bishnik talking about the streets are paved with gold back here thanks to the current chief and the tribal council and how great things are everywhere, and that's all people in California see. And let's come out and visit you two or three times a year and shake your hands and bring out, at the tribe's expense, bring out these people and tell you how good you are. We'll send you a calendar every year. We'll send you a birthday card every year. You love us. We love you. Forget about that effect. You know, just the fact that those votes are not counted right makes it an illegitimate election. That's why after 99, the people who have been active in tribal politics, who have run for chief, decided, hey, it's a sham. We're not going to participate in it. You know, we're not going to give any kind of legitimacy to an election process that is corrupt and is a sham, is fake. We are not going to give it by participating, and they pulled out. So that's why Greg Powell hasn't had any kind of opposition for the last 12 years. Now, if you ask the tribal government, they say, oh, that's because everybody loves him so much that no one runs against him. They're just so satisfied with the way things are that no one runs against him for chief. That's what they'll tell you. But the fact is, they try to get people to run every time, because if they do, then they can look and say, hey, look, we had this election. It's all legitimate. People are active in this tribal elections. They believe in it. They feel empowered. They're voting, and we're talking about 86% of the vote. So he's just loved, and that's how they make it sound legitimate. And in fact, they're the ones who count it. They're the ones who make the percentage, whatever they want it to make. I remember Hollis that last election that he had, I can't remember, it was 95 or whenever it was, he predicted what the percentage would be that he would, his victory would be. And he was exactly right. So how could he do that? You know, unless he knew it.
Yeah, yeah, that's his arrogance coming out. They didn't feel like nobody's going to pay attention. And even if they did, ain't nothing nobody can do about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He likes to rub in people's faces.
That's basically the situation, you know. And, you know, I like the other day when you all were going to go up there and talk to the tribal council, I really debated. I was going up to see my mom. And also there was some question of whether the tribe might come in and do some things up here in where I live that might help out the place I was worked at. And even though I wouldn't be a part of that, I didn't want to cause them problems, so I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't go. But I knew that when you all talked about you're going down there, you're going to address the council, you know, I knew that maybe Yanish would know how that was done because his father and his grandfather both served with the tribal council. But the fact is you have to get put on that agenda down at the Thursday before. They'd have that meeting down at Durant that you can't go to unless you're invited, the secret meeting where they actually discuss all these laws and stuff before their Saturday council meeting, when they come in and vote 12-0 for everything. And so I knew if you got put on that agenda, then when you went up there to speak, well, they'd have to vote on you and let you, you know, say, well, you know, the council speaker would say, you know, we got a vote to let you speak. Now, I think you should speak because I think that every Choctaw should have a right to address their council. But if one of the council members don't want you to speak because they disagree, then we can't let you speak. Let's have a vote, and there'll be 11 vote yes and one will vote no, and that's the end of it. And because I've been through that, and as we talk about, you know, listening to our elders and people who have been through things, we pay a lot of lip service to that, but then when it really comes down to listening to what has happened in the past, no one asks the elders what's happened. And so they make the same mistakes. They think that it's legitimate and that this, you're going to get up there and they're going to listen to you, and it doesn't happen. I know that you mentioned that Ted Dosh said something about, well, we've never done this before as far as just listening to people. They used to do it when they were at Belvin Housing. You could come up at the end of the meeting, and there was this thing, says, is there anybody that has new business from the floor that wants to talk, you know, to the tribal council? And they would go till 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you know, listening to people with their complaints and their concerns and listening to what they had to say. And when the new constitution came along, they decided that wouldn't be efficient. That would be efficient business for the tribe, because we're a business, we're a corporation, and we need to be efficient. So what we need to do is to have, you know, a meeting on Thursday before, so the department heads can be there and everybody, we can discuss with the council and let them know exactly what's happening. We don't need to do that anymore in front of the people. We need to do that in a secret little meeting because nobody asks questions and it'll be a lot quicker. And then at the end of those tribal council meetings, we don't really need to hear the people because they've already elected their councilman. So that's their voice. They've already spoken. So we really need to listen to individual Choctaws unless it's something we want to hear, you know, that we've asked them to come. And that's where that was done away with. And that was when they moved to the new building back in the old mid-'80s. So that's kind of the history of it. I guess the last thing I kind of want to talk about was the actual election, the voter registration list. It's been a sore spot from 1985, the first election after the Constitution was done. And basically what happened was before that time, the tribe had an agreement with the BIA that they had to turn in the names, addresses of all tribal members every 4 years before elections. And Harriet James, who was on the tribal council and ran for chief back then, found out about that. So she sued the Bureau of Indian Affairs saying, I want that list. That is under the Freedom of Information Act. I want you to give me a copy. That went to the federal court in Muskogee. And basically during that time, the tribal government and the BIA collaborated together and said, well, you know what? The BIA is no longer going to require that you send us a list of names and addresses. We're going to have you send us just a list of names of tribal members. And so when Harriet won her case back in, I think it was 85, Jacobs could tell you better because he was accurate in the time. When she won her case, the BIA handed Harriet a list of names, just the same thing that you'll get if you run for chief, you know, in the next election, and said, here you go, you win. You know, but what she got was a list of names with no addresses. It was the maiden names of all the women. And so how would you find Joe Fobb if there's, you know, 1,000 Joe Fobbs in the United States of America? Which Joe Fobb do you need to get a hold of to talk to about, you know, the tribal election and what you want to do? You wouldn't be able to find him. Well, that's the thing. And you mentioned last week about you looked at a PDF on the tribal website and said, oh, yeah, we give those out to the candidates. Well, 2 years from now when you run and you get that list of names with no addresses, then you're going to say, well, wait a minute, that's not what you told us. I mean, that's not what you said. Well, that is what they said. You'll get a list, but it's not a list that you can use. That's how the tribal government works. They're crooked. They deceive their own people. Now, that isn't to say they don't do good things for people. They don't. It's not to say that there's people down there at Durant that aren't good people that actually try to help Indian people, help their Choctaw people, because there are. I know a lot of them that are good. They're just quiet, you know, because if they get known that they're helping people out, they don't really get real popular down there, you know. But that's how that all happened. Is Harriet did actually try to get that list for us back in '85, and the BIA and the tribal government collaborated together and denied her what any candidate has. The tribal attorney at the time told the tribal council, you know, we really can't give all that stuff up because people have a right to their privacy, and, you know, there's the Privacy Act and all that. We really can't give all the names and addresses. They may use that to send people junk mail, you know, or sell it to some corporation for junk mail and stuff, and people won't want that. And so he said that was the reason that they didn't do it. Well, the tribal council voted not to give out the addresses. Well, now if you ask them now, you know, of course, the thing to remember is that Privacy Act, that's a federal law. The tribal government is not bound by that federal law. But he told the council, yes, you asked the council to say, well, the tribal attorney advised us we couldn't do it because of the Privacy Act. You asked the tribal attorney, he'll say, well, no, the reason you can't get it is because the tribal council voted not to give it out. So it's, again, a deception, a catch-22. The same tribal attorney who was an attorney for the Chickasaws, you can get that list with names and addresses for $35 from the Chickasaws if you run for an election. You know, but so the same attorney gave that advice to one, you know, nation, and then gave us advice in a different way to our nation, and we bought it, and we still hold it like it's the gospel.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's interesting, and like I said, this was like 30 years ago, and we have to reeducate them, and that's why I've been having this thought since last weekend when we talked about, you know, this conviction. You know, do I really expect them to, you know, give you a pardon? No. Yep. I'd like people to know that this had happened. I'd like to know a little bit about the history. And so while you've been talking, I've kind of been making some notes and some thoughts and ideas that, you know, I did look at the Dry case that was on appeal to the 10th Circuit.
Right.
But I just need to try to find more and more information so I can, you know, list my sources and my dates. If it's available on the internet, then that way anybody else can look at it, they can see this.
Yeah.
And you know, it's also possible that because of the kind of person I am, that they will let me speak on a council next week over this prisoner's rights issue. But, you know, we'll just have to see. And as far as, you know, I went to Honolulu 1 year, and it turned out there's a Senate hearing being held there on the Hawaiian sovereignty, or what they call the Akaka Bill.
Yeah,
and some people had asked me to come and speak, and one guy who's going to let me, you know, have his time, he went up and spoke, says, you know, my name's so-and-so, I'm a farmer from the Big Island, and I'm going to yield the remainder of my time for my brother from the mainland. We kind of ambushed the Senate committee, because I just got up and walked up there and sat down next to him and began talking. I looked over and saw Senator Inouye and some of the other members of the committee going over all the paperwork, and as I started talking, one of the secretaries started walking off to come and tell me something, and I know he called her back and just kind of shook his head and waved his hand like, just never mind, too late now, he's already going. Then we were all allotted 5 minutes, but for the previous 3 or 4 days, nobody was held to their 5 minutes. They, you know, people spoke up to 20 minutes to a half hour. But, you know, when I got to my 5 minutes, and after I began my speech by apologizing for what my native sister from Alaska and from the mainland had said about, you know, supporting this act, I said, they were wrong. These are Indians who's been so assimilated into American society. These are American Indians. These are not native people. They belong to another subculture of Indian people. So I'm a traditional person, and I'm going to encourage you not to support this bill, because the minute you do, you're going to lose any standing that you have for your sovereignty, for your freedom, for your liberation. You have a good case right now. And because I spoke that way, right at my 5 minutes, Senator Inouye started pounding his gavel. Your time is up. So I continued on talking. Senator Inouye had to cut my microphone off. One of the Native Hawaiians who ran the camera for public television in Hawaii told me, speak up louder. We want to hear what you got to say. So I was shouting my statement to them. And Senator Noy came up there with his Secret Service people, told me I needed to be quiet and sit down, that my time was up. I told him, I said, look, you know, I'm not here to talk to you. I'm here to talk to the people. They need to hear the truth. He got mad. He walked over, pounded his gavel, and said, well, we're going to call a recess. And the Senate committee walked out on me. And I continued talking until I was done. I mean, that's just how I am. That's who I am. And I think, you know, they kind of know that. You know, we made those jokes right when I got back to Oklahoma, and I mentioned about the SWAT team and the armored personnel carrier. It was like, oh, maybe it's for Bob or Doug, or maybe it's because I moved back to the Choctaw Nation. Now they're worried. Maybe they are. Maybe they aren't.
Well, I think they said they were going to do it for drug interdiction is what they needed for, so they could bust into meth houses and stuff and help the local counties do that. I know the Cherokees just got a big armored carrier, but they're going to make it into an ambulance. I think it's basically, you know, our tribe is very good at writing grants, and I think that they basically found some money and wrote for this grants. They want to give everything they can. That's how we got the Promise Zone, you know, is because we have better lobbyists than the Sioux do, you know, and that's why the Sioux more poor than us don't get it, but we do, because that's how the government works. And you know, the thing is, I'll say one thing for Greg Pyle, he does know how to work that system. When he was vice chief, he was basically the man in charge of making sure we got those grants and stuff. So, you know, that's why we're doing as well as we do now. I think, you know, some of it kind of leans to the other thing you talked about was the tradition, you know, that basically us as a separate people, as a Choctaw people, is really not we're not what we were. I mean, we've become lost, and that's a decision we made back before the non-Indians came, that we were kind of changing our culture and stuff at the time. We just got hit at a bad time, and we started lusting after the ways of the non-Indians, and we adopted it, and now we've reaped what our ancestors sowed. I you know, you talked about trying to find a Leakchi in the 10F counties. I only know one. You know, I used to know several who were real doctors. I know people who call themselves doctors, but I knew there's only one that I know of in the 10F counties, and she lives down near Honeby if she's still alive. I haven't met her, but I've talked to people who know, you know, real traditional people, and said that she lives down there, and she's one of the last we have. Most of the young people that are becoming doctors now are having to learn from other tribes. I know several that are learning from the Cherokee and the Creek. Of course, there's a lot of people that have learned from the, you know, Lakota and up that way, but they're not learning from Choctaw because our doctors have gone. And I think the reason that is because once our people turned away from our traditions and our language and our culture and separated from our families and all that there was no need for Leakchis, and Leakchis basically disappear. But, you know, the same creator that made the Choctaw people is still in power, and I feel confident that if we were to turn our hearts back towards, you know, a need and a desire to be a separate people, be the Choctaw that we're supposed to be, that I think our creator can restore a lot of those things. I know we can't restore it on our own. You mentioned about people who talk about, you know, people who've tried to set things up and help with the culture. Maybe you're not aware, but there is a Stomp Dance Grounds at Tuscahoma. You know, Tuscahoma Stomp Dance Grounds.
Yeah, I'm aware of that one.
Yeah, been going on for 4 years, but very few Choctaw come to it. And there's always those things, well, but, you know, the leader, he's not a native speaker, and he's done this, and I know him, and, you know, and this kind of thing. Or the people that go to it, well, they're not full-blooded, you know, it's not really a thing. Well, the fact is that all these people who down-talk, you know, that these kind of attempts aren't doing anything themselves. You know, they're letting the culture go. So it's just so easy to criticize those people who try to do things. There's lots of people in the nation that are trying to do things. Yonish Scott is doing his language program down at Medill with the opposition of the tribal government because they can't control it. There's people that are doing bringing back traditional horticulture, you know, and seeds that have been not planted for years, getting planted again and harvested so that we can make up a seed bank of those traditional things. There's people doing all these things that we aren't aware of because the tribal government doesn't want us to be aware of it. They don't want us to do it because they don't directly control it. You know, you talked about your ideas for developing economic growth in the Choctaw Nation to give a helping hand, a hand up instead of a hand out. Well, that's been the same thing that other candidates for chief have said. And basically the thing they found was the tribe doesn't want to invest in individual ideas and growth. They want to invest in tribal ideas and growth, and that they want to, you know, anything that's going to be happening is going to be done through the tribe. It's going to be a tribal effort, not individuals. That's why they don't give loans out to people to help them. They had a little program where they did that. It was a federal government, again, a grant they got, so they had to spend it on that. But they never really publicized it, and they never made it really hard, and so made it people know about it. And so it became very hard to get that money to actually bring yourself up as an individual Choctaw. Because if you do that, well, then they can't control you. And the whole thing about the tribal government is control. They have to control everything that you do. They have to control you. Because if they don't control you, then you're a danger to them. And so that's why they've never done it that way. They've never adopted that model of let's help our people up as individuals. No, they want to, you know, let's get the money into the tribe so we can control it. And I mentioned that, you know, I asked about that one time. Well, what about the salaries? What about the money? You know, where's it going? You know, tell me about how come I don't get to know what, I'm a Choctaw. How come I don't know where this money's going? Oh, that's not your business. That's the tribe's business. That's what the tribal attorney told me. I thought, well, wait a minute, Jack. You know, you're a non-Indian. Who are you to tell me that this isn't my business? I'm Choctaw. This is my tribal government. And you're saying I have no right to know. I know that the Powell administration was very sensitive to this, because if you'll remember, right after he got in power, after Hollis was convicted, and he became chief, that the tribal Bishnik, the newspaper or scandal sheet, whatever you want to call it, started publishing the budget every month. It was in there for several months. Now, the budget was published really didn't tell you anything. It didn't tell you how much money was coming in for the casinos and where it was going, but it gave you some figures there to give the appearance again that they were being open and transparent, and that they were letting people know about their business. But even that's quit. They don't do that anymore because they feel no need for it. People didn't ask anymore, and so that went away.
Yeah, they don't want to print fairy tales.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they can get a return on that one in votes.
Yeah, and people believe it because people feel no connection with it. You know, really, your vote's worthless. You really don't have any say-so in your government. So basically, you're there to see what they're going to give you. You know, it's all about getting the crumbs that they're given. You know, that's how our tribal government basically started. Was back in the, you know, before we left, they gave the three war chiefs, you know, Pushmataw, Pukshinubi, and Moshlatubi, power. They gave them trinkets and farm implements and guns and powder and iron kettles, and that came through those three men, you know, down to people rather than through the town chiefs, because they wanted to have only three people to treat with when they wanted to take land. So they gave them power by giving them all this stuff to the people, and the people turned away from the town chiefs and started listening to Pushmataw and Pukshinubi and Moshlatubi. They became our big district chiefs, and everybody followed them because they were getting broadcloth and, you know, buttons and stuff from them, whereas the town chiefs really couldn't give you all that. And so they lost power. And then eventually became the tribal council and the chiefs, you know, three chiefs. We had three chiefs originally back in the 1855. And they were the ones that held power because they're the ones who received the money from the federal government and distributed it out to the people. So they had the power. That was an artificial system set up by the federal government. You know, and so the tribal council we have now and the tribal government we have now is that same federally designed system, but it's got our name. And that's why people can't let go of it, because it's got our name. You know, and all the great things that our ancestors did, you know, to give us a country and give us certain powers, all this kind of stuff, all things did. Well, that's ours, and so that's why we're a part of that. But as long as we keep chasing those crumbs that are distributed through the tribal government, then we're still under the power of the federal government, and that's where our enemy is. That's the one that keeps these people in power, just like Noriega, Marcos, any of those other dictators. As long as they keep their people down and keep them quiet, the federal government is going to support them. And the only reason that Hollis got out is because Hollis became an embarrassment. And they finally had to let him go. And who did they put in right after Hollis went out? You know, did the system change at all? Are any of the people that had power gone? It's the same people.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I can say kind of gives my hand a little bit is I can't remember the name of the organization in the Pacific Northwest that was anti-treaty, and they did absentee voting and membership. So what some of the Native people did there to, you know, remove them from being in their way is they all sent in their $5 membership fee. And then once they had enough of them sent in, they called for a vote, and then they showed up, and a majority of the membership were Native people, and they voted all the racists out, and then they abolished the organization, which, you know, made a statement about, you know, how to undermine the people that become their adversaries, their enemies. And what we're dealing here is...
Well, the problem we have here is, of course, you don't have access to the voters, number one. You can't find them all. You know, there's only a fourth of the registered voters, or it was back, let's see, about 10 years ago, a fourth of the registered voters lived in the 10.5 counties, and of those, about a fourth were over a quarter blood. Okay, and so you think you know who all these Indians are, but three-quarters of the people that live in here are less than a quarter. How are you going to identify them? And on top of that, three-quarters of the people who are voters are living outside the 10.5 counties. How are you going to find them? And if you think about it, if a fourth of the registered voters are over a quarter, and that's the way it was back, you know, like I said, about 10, 15 years ago, if only a fourth of a quarter, how are you going to get three-quarters of the tribal government to vote themselves out? You know, you're not. And you're not going to be able to find that fourth because you've only got an eighth. You only got a 16th of the voters, you know, that are over a fourth living down here that you can actually find just by going door-to-door and knocking. You know, so that's the problem you have. Saying we're going to unite all the full bloods and we're all going to make a change, you'll do that in a limited fashion, you know, but it won't be anything that will change nationally. It'll have to be some other means to actually change the national government. You know, I talk about Glenn Johnson being a good example of all this. Glenn Johnson, as far as I know, is the only person who was ever elected to the tribal council without the support of the tribal government. And the reason he got in was because, number one, his people worked their butts off in Push County to get him in, but the tribal government thought that they had a man who was a religious leader who was well known among the county and the nation. They thought that there was no way that anyone could ever defeat him, and so they let the guard down on him, and he got voted out. Well, 4 years later, Glenn Johnson got voted out, again by the absentee voters, by the number of absentee voters that voted. And I mentioned on the blog talk that a lot of times that there's a lot of tribal employees who change their county affiliation right before the elections, and they vote in these counties that there's a danger to the tribal candidate. And so the absentee voters will vote you out, even though the people who live there will vote for one person. The absentee voters will get rid of them, and a lot of those are tribal employees. And we found that out in the elections. You know, so, I mean, that's when we talk about, you know, people who want to go through the tribal election process and make a change. That's what you need to be aware of. You're looking at, you know, and it's going to be a lot harder than you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take something like a miracle, something crazy to happen.
Yep.
And the thing is, I've seen things take place, and I ain't saying that I can make it happen, but I'm going to give it a shot. That's just where I'm still at, you know. That's how I really feel about it. I do have those mixed feelings.
Sure.
I'm not entirely happy about legitimizing a system that I really don't believe in. But at the same time, I can't just sit aside and let them run amok. I got to throw a monkey wrench into it. I got to, you know, do something. And then, you know, people tell me, well, if you're so sovereign, why don't you get a driver's license? Why do you do the Social Security number? Okay, some of our people are involved in guerrilla warfare. They do what they got to do to blend in so they're not spotted and removed and eradicated. You know, people think that may be dishonest, but, you know, there's nothing dishonest about that. You know, we're not a people of power. We don't have the military that outnumbers theirs. We don't have the economics that outnumber theirs. You know, we're a people that's been subjugated by the United States through the Marshall Decision, through the BIA, and through a system of propaganda over the last 200 years. If we have to use deceit and people see the truth, then I'll play that card.
Yeah.
But for me, a lot of the process is to create that form of education. Something maybe to get people talking. Maybe it may capture their attention. Maybe it won't. Because when we had to do that long hair lawsuit out of McAllister, I ran into all kinds of opposition. But, you know, I continued to do what I had to do, what I felt I had to do. Right or wrong, regardless of what price I paid, I went ahead and did it. I had no way of knowing that I was going to receive a Human Rights Award for what I had done. I had no way of knowing that when I came out that and acquire some respect from many tribal leaders that we talk about. Because on one hand, outside of Choctaw Nation. And we had the Kiowa people, Comanche people, areas. They know what traditional spirituality means to them. It's still real to them. It acquired their respect. And from so many people across the country, I started hearing from them that what helped me in the long run do what I do. Okay. So is anybody hearing static? My wife says she's hearing static. Well, it is the internet. Who knows what's going on there? I'm hoping somebody's not running the vacuum cleaners in the other part of the house here.
Well, Ben, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. I don't want to come across as discouraging anyone. I wanted to come down when you all talk because I figured you were going to get arrested, and I wanted to have my granddaughter there to watch people getting arrested so she'd see the same thing that my son saw when we got arrested, and to feel a little spark there of wanting to be, you know, to know what's going on with their tribe and such. And so, I don't want to discourage people. I just don't want you to do the same mistakes that we did, to go in unawares of the problems that you're going to face, you know, and try to make these attacks. I hate people wasting their time doing the same old things and never getting anything come of it. I like to see us try to make some sort of plan that would actually have, you know, a real impact. And, you know, I told you my own personal view is I've pretty much gotten out of the politics part because I don't see it as being ours. I mean, it's a fake system set up by a foreign government, you know, with our name on it. I've always thought the more important thing is to try to help support things that bring back the culture and tradition, the language, our stomp dances, our medicines, our foods, our that kind of thing. Because once we see that we are a separate people, that we are unique people with certain gifts that our Creator gave to us that no one else has, and certain responsibilities that we have that no one else has, then we'll feel a unity, and then maybe we will once again rise up as a nation, as a people, as a unified people. I see that as being my goal now, and that is a goal that takes generations to do, because it's generations that's got us to where we are at now. It'll be generations to fix these things, but I think that in my mind, for me, that is the important thing. But I understand that everyone has their own way of doing things, their own ways of working for the people, and I would not want to discourage people who see the political aspect of it or the activism aspect of it as being a way to go, because we're all part of the same thing. We're all part of the same effort. And so I just want to go with that bit of encouragement that these young men and young women who want to get in there and get politically active and make a change, go for it. I support you. If you have any questions, you know, I'm always around. I'll lend you whatever support I can. Okay.
No, I do look forward to that, and I will be calling on you on that. And I guess you know, the one thought I have on that is, a lot of people can hear your story. They're going to say, "Well, that was back then. This now, it's all different."
Yeah.
But the only way they're going to know it's not different.
Yeah, that's what we said back then.
And the only way they're going to know it's not is to see that it's still going on again. So yeah, sometimes we got to go through that same process.
Yeah.
But maybe if I can pull a different slant on it or something that I said, see, this is what Bob went through 30 years ago. It's still going on now. Here's when you should be concerned.
Yeah.
You know, just keep that connection, that pattern of corruption going to show that there is a pattern here. And because this pattern has existed for 30 years, it is very strongly entrenched, so nobody should have any illusions that we can change it. Easy. It's going to take sacrifice.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks
sacrifices.
A lot.
Yep. All right, we'll talk to you again. I appreciate it, Bob.
Bye.
All right. Well, I hope you people enjoyed this bit of a history lesson. You know, there's things that we do need. You know, Bob doesn't see himself as an elder. He doesn't see himself as a hero. But he was one of those who stood up at that time. He is part of that history. He made history. You know, he had made his sacrifices for that also. You know, we heard our discussion on how it is. It really hasn't changed. If nothing else, they've even finessed it so much more now. And with using technology, they can do this quite often, is put a whole different story on it. You know, you see it in the papers a lot of time. You see it in local news in the evenings. Just a fringe element. Just some unsatisfied people. You know, anything they can to marginalize and make us seem insignificant. And it is going to probably take numbers. it's also going to take, you know, a miracle of some sorts. And I don't know about a lot of other people, but you know what? I do believe in miracles, and I've seen miracles. I've seen things growing out of resistance. Because sometimes that spark catches fire, and sometimes it doesn't. But you know what? That spark would never caught fire if somebody didn't try to create a spark. But if you can make that spark, then you know what you're getting into. Try to put together some kind of a plan. And if you don't have an idea for a plan, then there's people like Bob, people like Giannis, a lot of people from across this country, a lot of Choctaws that you could find and talk to somewhere and start getting ideas. But how it all starts is Bob didn't train, organize, be an activist. I didn't do that either. I was the guy who was looking for somebody else to take care of these problems until I was sitting in solitary one time and found that I had to find another way to make the changes I felt needed to happen. So I began to do it for myself. I started reading. I started learning. Began my own form of legal research studies. Started learning the law. Started learning the procedures and policies. Till after a few years, I was so good at policies and procedures in the Oklahoma Department of Corrections, I've had case managers who refused to speak policy with me. I had another case manager who was our case manager on our unit. She was a senior case manager. She reassigned another case manager over our unit because she didn't want to be my case manager. She ran from me. I've had state Supreme Court order rehearings of disciplinary procedures that I was going through. And they've all told me this has never been done before. You have to learn how to utilize the system, how to make it work for them. Is it going to always work for you? No. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you can trap them. It's a chess game. You can trap them into a corner where you take the disguise off of them. You make them see people for who they really are. And this is the thing that some of those people in the Choctaw Nation don't want. They're like cockroaches. You start shining light their way, they're going to scurry and hide. They're going to throw other people under the bus to make themselves look good. They're going to call in favors and to discredit other people. So, no, this is not going to be easy. It's going to be time-consuming. But, you know, we have to do things sometimes, whether we like it or not. We have to find ways to make change to better things for people. So we'll be stomping some cockroaches over the next few years and hope that somebody can continue to join us and help pass the word out. This show I did today, you know, gave me some more ideas. And, geez, you know, I just wish somebody would contribute a means to allow me to stay home so I can do a lot of writing, do a lot of research, and keep putting things out there. But, you know, I've got a family to take care of, so I continue to work 40, 50 hours a week. That takes time out. But I try to get done what I can, and doing this blog radio show is one of the ways that I choose to do this. And hopefully I can keep growing and putting together equipment that I need. Because I recently purchased a good digital recorder that I can go out and do interviews and record and transfer as MP3 and upload for future shows. I want to get a really good digital recorder, video recorder, and do interviews. I want to create, you know, some little, small little mini documentaries. I want to record these things for people to continue to see for years after I'm gone, for generations, so that they know the real history of what the Choctaw Nation has done, the real history of what the United States government has done with the Choctaw Nation towards the Choctaw people. Because that process of assimilation they started in the 1700s, 1800s is still in play here. The Native American Rights Fund had put out a poster years ago that you can still see, but it said that the Indian Wars aren't over, and they're not. It's alive and well, and they have the United States government, their cavalry, their military, has their scouts in position, called the Chief and Assistant Chief of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, to ensure that the people continue on with assimilating into a dominant society. And if a time ever comes that so many people have went that way, that they all see themselves Americans, well, you want to bet people like Greg Powell, Gary Batt wants, let's turn this into a corporation. Let's make us all shareholders so we don't have to do these social service programs. And we can turn this and we'll make a lot of money. I believe that will happen. And you know what's going to happen to some of these shareholders? Shareholders like me who are still vocal, we're going to get kicked out somehow. They're going to vote to pay me a small sum and take my share until finally they have the majority of the share for themselves. It's all about greed and a lust of power that it's sickening, that they'll step on anyone to get their way. And if they're willing to use dead people's votes to keep their people in position of power, they've done it, and they'll continue to do it. So we've pretty much used up our 2 hours here, shared a lot of good thoughts and ideas, and the show. And pretty much every Sunday, so you can, you know, start setting your clocks by it. You know, maybe I'll go ahead and ask some other guests come in from they can talk about the problems they have with their tribal council, their chairmen. Or we may talk about a whole different issue altogether. But I also want to keep everybody in mind that February 27th is going to be the anniversary of the occupation of Wounded Knee, where people made a stand way back in 1973, a long time ago, because the tribal council was so corrupt that they had to do something to expose them. And one of the leaders from that day of liberation, that stand, was Carter Camp, a Ponca man who passed away here recently, who was a lifelong friend of mine. We have other people from Oklahoma who were part of that. That was Frances Wise, and she has passed on a few years ago. But we have people like David Hill, Richard Way Whitman, and a handful of others who are still alive who are part of that resistance. That we still have those kind of elders among us to share their stories of what really took place, what really happened. And hopefully I can gather some of these people together to get their stories recorded and do a show. Maybe things will turn out that I can afford to go to South Dakota and meet with people and do interviews with them person to person and collect report on it. Because a lot of those people are almost gone now. Maybe more than, I know that more than will pass away for the next anniversary. And we need their stories. Because there are a lot of people who want to take those stories and change them and make them something that it wasn't. And it's already been happening. So we'll see you guys next weekend. I appreciate you, you know, coming in. Appreciate Bob coming on. And we're going to have a good one. All I can ever share with people is one of the things that Bullitt said. Let's be crows. We are who we are. Let's be proud of who we are. And let's find our way back home. We don't need to be a crow. We're eagles.
Yuckas.